There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riespendel, and I'm your host. On today's program, two interviews from the Media Geek archives. First, we'll hear from a member of the Immokalee Workers, talking about their McDonald's Truth campaign that toured around the country earlier this year. And she'll also discuss the role that independent media, specifically Low Power FM, played in helping the Immokalee Workers obtain a better contract with Taco Bell. Then we'll hear from Ragnar Dennisjold, who produces the Pirates Week podcast, who'll tell us more about the world of pirate radio on the shortwave bands. That on today's edition of Media Geek. Do stay tuned. On March 28th, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers were in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, home of WEFT and home of Media Geek, for the McDonald's Truth Tour 2006, the Real Rights Tour, which is part of their campaign to make people aware of the plight of the workers who are tomato pickers in the state of Florida and trying to get better wages and better treatment from the growers, who are primarily serving the fast food industry, companies like Taco Bell, with which they recently won a victory, and McDonald's. And part of their campaign to make people know more about what life is like as an agricultural worker picking tomatoes in Florida has been the use of independent media. In fact, the workers have a low-power FM station in Immokalee, Florida, which they use to help organize and educate the workers who work on these different tomato farms. So I was lucky enough to be able to meet up with Francisca Cortez, who is with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. She also works on the low-power FM station they have down there in Florida. And along with her was Miguel Gutierrez, who was nice enough to act as a translator. She spoke in Spanish, and Miguel helped translate that to English for us. And so, first off, we're going to hear from Francisca tell us more about the tour and the conditions that the workers work under in Florida and what they're trying to achieve with the tour. And then we'll hear more about how they've used independent media and how things like Low Power FM have helped them greatly. This is Francisca Cortez of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers.
Bueno, esta es una gira que empezó este 26 de este mes de marzo.
The tour began on the 26th of March, and it's essentially us, the workers, taking our message out across the country to the students, organizations, and communities that support us to get the word out about what our campaign against McDonald's and why it is that we're initiating this campaign.
So why are you having the campaign against McDonald's? What's the problem?
Bueno, el problema con McDonald's en este momento es que no están.
Well, our problem with McDonald's is that they're not listening to what we're demanding from them, and what we demand is economic relief, respect for our rights, and actually real rights.
Porque después de que ganamos la.
After our victory against Taco Bell, we sent letters to McDonald's and others in the fast food industry as a following to that campaign, asking for essentially the same that we had demanded of Taco Bell, and they have not responded in a very constructive way.
Y lo que hicieron es formar una organización que se llama
SAFE. And what they have done is created this organization called SAFE, which translates to safely accountable farming employers, which is composed of the Florida Vegetable and Fruit Growers Association and the RCMA, which is a child care organization. And essentially it creates this code of conduct, which includes everything other than what the workers actually need or have demanded.
Entonces, con esta organización, lo único que están haciendo es...
So what this organization is doing essentially is negating everything we accomplished during the Taco Bell campaign, where Taco Bell agreed to pay one more penny per pound of tomatoes they consume from Mockley, and where they also brought us to their level where we now know who they purchase from and how much they purchase, and we work together with them to make sure that this wage increase reaches the workers.
Todo lo que hemos ganado por cuatro años están tratando de empujarnos otra vez bajo la mesa. Y aparte de
And another part of this safe organization has been the undertaking of a labor study by a nun that McDonald's employed previously in other labor disputes. And from the outset, the general thrust of this study has indicated that farm workers are not actually poor, that they earn $10 to $14 an hour and don't live in very dire conditions. But in reality, we do live in dire conditions.
Lamentablemente, vivimos todavía en esas condiciones. Entonces, lo que nosotros decimos es
given that workers haven't been included in any of these proposals from SAFE from the very beginning, it's entirely possible that this study will conclude without anyone ever actually having stepped on an agricultural field, and all the information and documentation being supplied from growers, which as has been our experience, is sometimes falsified, where when you actually work 10 hours, they'll really only count for 4. And when you have 4 hours and the amount that one earns in 10 hours, it seems like you're earning more than you actually do. That's why today many of us workers are here on tour, missing about maybe 10 days of work, to get on the community and across the country to make sure that everybody knows that these ideas that McDonald's is proposing or advancing are the reality.
And so on your tour fighting McDonald's, what are you doing in the cities where you're stopping?
Bueno, estamos haciendo presentaciones, hablando...
Well, in addition to actions, we're getting out and talking. We're talking to student groups, religious groups in the community, talking about what we've mentioned in terms of why we're launching this campaign against McDonald's and what's the motivation. And...
Y que sí vamos a poder ganar esta campaña contra McDonald's. Simplemente va siempre a tardar, ¿no?, cada lucha. Entonces, es por eso que estamos hablando de diferentes, dando diferentes presentaciones y viendo videos y usando dibujos que usualmente usamos en nuestra comunidad.
And what kind of actions are you doing?
Bueno, estamos haciendo protestas. Y estamos,
well, we're protesting. Essentially, these actions are protests against McDonald's. Under the umbrella of the Alliance for Fair Food, but we're waiting until the 1st of April to decide whether or not we're going to initiate a boycott campaign against McDonald's.
Por cuál rumbo tomar, pero en este momento estamos en esa campaña Alianza por Comida Justa. Y la primera protesta hicimos en Gainesville.
The first stop was in Gainesville, when that marked our initial first ever action against McDonald's. And we noticed that there was a lot of excitement with our supporters there, but there was also a lot of fear and on part of McDonald's, because there were actually 4 corporate representatives there, and they were taking pictures of the action constantly. And so, if anything, that to us, that's a sign of that, you know, the pressure is on and they're feeling it and they're interested in seeing what we're going to do.
Estamos haciendo algo malo, yo no sé, pero están tratando de ver qué estamos haciendo. Entonces eso es algo interesante, que están sintiendo la presión de nosotros. Entonces no es
normal. And in the subsequent actions on the tour on our way here, it's been the same thing at every stop, every McDonald's action.
Y esperamos que ellos tengan la conciencia de que nos.
And we hope that they understand that we have the strength to continue, and that we're going to continue struggling with this campaign until they meet what it is that we demand.
If McDonald's meets your demands, how will that change life for the workers?
Bueno, va a cambiar como cambió con.
Well, it'll change workers' lives, as the Taco Bell agreement has changed workers' lives, and that's immediate economic relief with the wage increase. The feeling that you're a part of this supply chain, this corporate supply chain, and also that there's an immediate sense of respect and dignity from growers and subcontractors that work that you work for in the fields, because that's really what this is, an essential part of the struggle is that we're not treated like human beings, we're treated like animals, and we're not animals. And a lot of times you see a lot of these the fast food industry often comes to agreements with other groups about animal rights, but they refuse to even address workers' rights.
And you're listening to an interview with Francisca Cortes from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and translated by Miguel Guitares. And this is Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I'm your host, Paul Rees-Mandel. And we're listening to this interview because the Coalition of Immokalee Workers are currently on a tour called the Real Rights Tour, which they are targeting the fast food chain McDonald's. It is the McDonald's Truth Tour, in which they're asking the company to give them a little bit more money for their labor supplying tomatoes to that fast food giant and others. You can check out Media Geek online at www.mediageek.net. You can get the radio program online as well. You can get it as a podcast automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player, or you can just listen to it right there. It's radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments, send them off to me, paul@mediageek.net. And we'll now continue with this interview with Francisca Cortes of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, where we'll talk a little bit more about how the workers have used independent media. So you have a low-power radio station in Florida?
Sí, tenemos una radio comunitaria en Immokalee, que es
we have a community radio station in Immokalee, which only has an 8-mile radius, but for us workers, it was always a dream. And once we accomplished this dream, we found that it's been a success, and so now we're working with people and trying, gathering donations, try to get a high-powered tower, hopefully to continue with the effort.
Para tener también una torre grande, porque gracias al apoyo de la gente que son como ustedes, nos ayudaron a construir una pequeña torre, la cual estamos usando ahora.
We also have members of the organization that work voluntarily in the evenings and on weekends when they're not on the job, with their particular radio programs. And so that's how we function, from donation to donation. And whenever we have problems, we have technicians that sometimes help us, but always at free of charge.
Sabe y tienen que apoyarnos gratuitamente. Entonces es así que está funcionando nuestra radio. Es uno de los es una parte de la comunicación, ¿no?
It's an integral part of the communication strategy, because some people can't regularly attend our meetings, but we have discussion, not only promoting meetings, but also about the issues, the workers' issues, and whoever across the Immokalee can access the radio station can learn about that.
Y es así que nosotros pudimos avanzar con la información, y cada gente que pudo escuchar pudo habernos apoyado en esta lucha.
How do you feel your fight has been portrayed in mainstream news, in the newspapers in Florida, or even national newspapers, national TV?
Bueno, en algunos artículos sí se ha como hablado.
Well, it's our experience that in some articles we've had, are the issues been well expressed, but oftentimes in some of the corporate media, there's a limit to how much they can say, and there's always also, usually they come to their own conclusion, which does not necessarily depict what we're trying to express.
And your tour now, I know that you stopped before I talked to you. You got a chance to speak with the low-power station in Urbana, WRFU. Are you getting a chance to work with independent media across the country?
Pues yo creo que sí.
Yeah, that's the plan. Last night, someone had an interview with independent media from Madison, and we hope to continue speaking with independent media because they've offered large support during our struggle.
And what are you asking people to do, people listening to this interview, what can they do to help?
Bueno, lo que estamos pidiendo es el apoyo de la gente.
Well, what we're asking of listeners is for your support. We have letters that we're sending out to managers from branches all over the country of McDonald's. We have postcards that are being sent to the president of McDonald's. And you can access all this information on our website, but you can also get out to the large national election that we're having on the 1st of April in Chicago. And if you want to contact us, our website is www.ciw-online.org.
And now it's an interview with Francisca Cortez from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Translation provided by Miguel Quiteras, who is also on the tour. The McDonald's Truth Tour, the Real Rights Tour, wraps up in Chicago on April 1st for a major march and rally, including a protest at the so-called Rockin' Roll McDonald's in the Loop there in Chicago. And this is Media Geek. I'll be back in just a moment with some news of our media environment. And of course, you can check us out online, MediaGeek.net. Do stay tuned. We're going to hear from Ragnar Dennisjold. He does a weekly podcast called The Pirates Week, which is news and views about pirate radio, specifically pirates who operate on the shortwave band. And why do pirates use the shortwave band? Why even focus on this? Well, Ragnar tells us more.
I started listening to shortwave about 8 years ago, like in the mid-90s, about the mid-90s. And tuning around on the band, I stumbled across a couple pirates, and it really intrigued me. And it's just in my nature that I became interested in them. And after listening for a while, I actually was a broadcaster for a few years, and then I've stopped that now. But the technical end of it really kind of got me interested in it and how to do it. Most of the shortwave pirates there operating now are just under the 40-meter ham bands, and that's kind of a technically difficult thing to do. You're talking big antennas and not really difficult to build transmitters, but a little bit more difficult than your typical FM rigs that are the broadcast bands.
And when you say you were a broadcaster, you mean a pirate broadcaster?
Yeah, I was. I did a pirate radio show for about 3 years before I gave it up.
And what kind of program did you do?
I started off mostly musical stuff, like typical people would do. They start off just putting out their favorite songs, and then I got more and more into some political commentary. But really the aspect for me was not as much the content of what I was doing. That was fun, but a lot of it was just seeing if I could do it. And really I got into the antennas. Some of the antennas for shortwave broadcasting can be technically challenging to build. They're quite large for building for 40 meters. You're talking, several hundred feet of wire strung up in the trees.
So, yeah, it's very different from, I think, most people are more familiar with FM, if they think about even broadcasters are listening, and the antennas are significantly smaller. And so you were sort of intrigued then by the challenge of engineering antennas and, I guess, transmitters as well that would work well in that part of the broadcast band.
Correct. I really believe that just about everybody has at least two good shows in them. And you know, most people people have two good shows that they have, you know, something they really want to say and get off their chest. And after that, you know, then you really get into the art of putting a show together, and that's a whole different ball game.
I guess, I mean, I understand, you know, the technical challenge, because it is difficult to work in the pirate bands or in the shortwave bands. But why become a broadcaster? Why get interested in this niche? I mean, it would seem like it's a fairly narrow niche of people who would listen in on shortwave pirates, because I mean, shortwave listening in general is more difficult than AM or FM radio listening. It's not nearly as popular in the U.S. as it is elsewhere. So why get into this even sort of smaller niche of broadcasting?
Well, a couple of reasons, really. And it is a small niche. There's probably only, I would say, 15 to 20 active shortwave pirates right now, and probably 200 to 300. It's hard to guess, but I would say 200 to 300 shortwave pirate listeners, the people that are actually listening on a, you know, weekly basis. Why do it? Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, with a decent antenna, with just like 40 watts, which is a typical station, not too hard to build, not too expensive to build, you can cover most of the United States with 40 watts. Certainly the eastern half, which is, you know, most of the people, if not, you know, pretty much the entire United States or North America with a decent antenna. And the fact with propagation, as a pirate, you don't want to get caught. Once you put that signal out there, it's really difficult to locate you if you're, you know, several states away, as opposed to broadcasting on an AM band or an FM band in your town. It's not too hard to figure out where you are.
Why not, you know, instead do ham radio? You know, amateur radio works in the shortwave band, so you get a lot of that, the technical quality, and many amateur radio enthusiasts are very proud of building their antennas and building their own transmitters and doing their own work. Why do pirate broadcast as opposed to just working within amateur radio?
Well, I think there's a lot of different reasons for pretty much every different broadcaster there is out there. Well, for one, you cannot, as a ham, cannot legally put out a continuous broadcast of a show. You know, that's what a lot of people actually like to do. They like to get their point across either politically or musically, and you really can't do that as a ham. But as a technical aspect, there's a lot of people that are just not, they're not joiners, and they don't want to go ahead into the government and join the ham and get their ticket, so to speak, to broadcast legally. And there's also the whole pirate aspect to it, where, you know, where it's a little bit illegal and it's a little bit dangerous, and, you know, people like to do that. There's definitely a romance to radio, and I think a lot of it is sticking your thumb up to the government, sticking your nose up to the government and saying, you can't control what I say and you can't tell me what I can and cannot broadcast.
And so do you think that in that way there is similarity between people who do unlicensed pirate FM broadcasting?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's the same. It's pretty much the same thing. Whereas, you know, unlicensed FM broadcasting, you're broadcasting to pretty much a larger, more accessible audience, but in a smaller physical area compared to shortwave broadcasting, where you're broadcasting to nationwide, more or less, to a slightly smaller audience. It still has the same pirate background of, you know, sticking your nose up to the government and telling them that, you know, you're going to say whatever you want to say.
And there's a bit more challenge in the listening as well. It's harder to pick up shortwave pirates.
Right. It's the whole aspect of DXing, which stands for, you know, tuning in distant signals. And there's a whole challenge aspect to that. And trying to tune in on a sideband or AM on a distant signal from a low wattage station is definitely a challenge. So there's almost like a hunting for a broadcast, trying to acquire it is definitely part of the challenge. And a lot of people enjoy that. I know I do.
And what kind of programs do other people tend to do, or what kind of programs do you often hear Is it just music, or do people do something a little bit more elaborate, a little bit more different than what you might hear on the regular broadcast bands?
Well, there's three or four different types of programs generally are falling under, and that's your pirates that are just starting out will tend, not always, but they will tend to put together music shows, which pretty much is, you know, typically an hour in length and, you know, a bunch of music that they enjoy or want to share with people. There's also some political pirates out there that will go off on their point of view and usually interweave that with musical selections, and then the operator will take some time and espouse his views and go back to music. And those are interesting. There are some really interesting pirate operators that will put elaborate broadcasts together that are just almost stream of consciousness rambles that are real storytelling. And those are real gems to catch. And it's almost like a story being played out. And those are neat. Those are really neat.
Transmeters, we got a stinking transmeter. Watt-socking blade modulated bolt anchors that glow in the dark.
Almost live from the ionosphere, it's the Pirates Week with Ragnar Danisjold.
You're listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm your host. Today, I'm talking to Ragnar Danisjold. He is the man behind the Pirates Week podcast, and we're talking about shortwave pirate operators, people broadcasting on the international shortwave bands without a license. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.mediageek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at mediageek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowe. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.